Welcome to the One Last Sketch podcast, the show dedicated to fantasy, science fiction, and history. We're not talking about any of those things today.
Nope.
Because on this 16th episode, we're going to talk about Canadian film!
They shot a movie once in my hometown. Everybody was in it for miles around.
So, what brought this on?
I was sad. I was alone. I was in Hinton on a rural rotation. And, yeah, I had CBC. You pointed out that I could watch, you know, the summer CBC Canadian film movie night on the Saturdays. And we did so via Skype. This caused a certain amount of pain and consternation. And we decided, well, since we suffered, why not watch more Canadian films and then do a podcast about them?
That basically sums it up. To celebrate this occasion, we're drinking a Canadian beer called Alexander Keith's. Marie is having the
premium white, which is okay.
Having the red amber ale. The red amber ale, which is okay.
Mediocre.
This is a very good introduction to the night, I think.
Yeah. And it gets them out of my fridge, so we get something useful out of this.
So, in terms of our past experiences with Canadian film, I've watched quite a bit more than Marie has, because growing up in Whitehorse, the public library had a bunch of them on VHS, and nothing else.
Yeah, and I saw one in high school.
So, taking that past into account, what does Canadian film mean to you after this long string of them, Marie?
Now that I've watched more, poor production values, bad ideas... poorly dressed sets and general cheapness, I guess.
We should probably give some context to listeners outside of Canada concerning the Canadian film industry?
Yeah, happenstance?
There are two streams of filmmaking in Canada which don't really cross all that often. Anglophone film in Western Canada, Maritimes, Ontario, Central Canada, and Quebecois film, which is in French.
Oui.
Yeah. Quebec film tends to actually have a star system that produces recognizable celebrities, larger budgets, better co-productions, Academy Awards.
Art.
A lot of which, yes, a lot of which does not really happen in Anglophone film. There is an explanation for this.
It's called the United States of America.
Yes, one of the largest film producers in the world since the beginning of the 20th century lies just south of the border. And most of the people here who are interested in making film go there. Make it big.
Yep. We are well known for exporting actors and comedians to the States.
Whereas the actual films that get produced in Canada are always smaller films, that without a doubt. Usually stuff that was either too strange, too quirky, too politically sensitive, or too ill-considered, perhaps, to get produced in Hollywood.
Yep.
Which does not mean, despite all our ragging, that all Canadian movies are bad.
No! There's at least one good one I can think of.
So I know of only one book that covers Anglophone Canadian
film.
Do
you?
Yes. It is Weird Sex and Snowshoes by Catherine Monk. I started reading it, wasn't really able to finish because I didn't agree with some of her opinions in the introductory material, and the rest is mostly short film reviews of probably every Canadian film made up till that point. People in our arts community get really defensive about Canadian movies, and this one argument that Catherine Monk makes that Canadian film is maybe just too intelligent to read a wider audience, reach a wider audience. And as with any other Canadian book about Canadian cultural production, It references Margaret Atwood's survival to set out the tenets of Canadian film. Something I find that does not work, because did you see any common themes between what we were watching?
Nope. And only one of them had a lighthouse in Cape Breton.
The other big part of it is that for the actual successful Canadian films, or most Canadian films, when you listen to interviews with directors, there doesn't seem to be a Canadian tradition that's getting built up in any way, in that they don't usually cite other Canadian movies or other Canadian directors as influences on their own work. There are probably reasons for why the situation is like this outside of the U.S. being such a big juggernaut in film. I mean, that obviously is a big part of it. The biggest part being that the United States, they speak English, and so do we. So unlike when you go to smaller European countries that have their own cinematic traditions, where audiences obviously want to watch films in their own language, Canadians can go elsewhere for that.
And we do.
I think that covers everything we needed to cover.
I think
so. Preamble. Let's dive in. Marie, Ticket to Heaven.
Ticket to Heaven. It's a movie from 1981. It's about cults in the 1960s. People becoming brainwashed. People getting deprogrammed after being kidnapped by their own families. As a 10th grade high school student, I thought it was moving, touching, quite profound. In retrospect, it probably has poorly dressed sets, and I don't think it's particularly well shot. I haven't seen it since then, but I remember it being fairly okay in the writing. There's a famous line of what to do when you're caught by someone who's trying to deprogram you, and the phrase is, find something sharp and remember, it's a cross for ambulance, down for death, in reference to how to slit your wrists. And,
I haven't seen it.
I think it's worth watching.
I know that Roger Ebert gave it a good review.
Yeah.
Which is perhaps unique in terms of what's available.
Yeah.
It is interesting to point out that, because we're going to start with the early era here, with the 70s and 80s, that the highest grossing Canadian film is not one that anyone thinks of as a Canadian movie and is not set in Canada. It is Porky's. Maybe one of the first teen gross-out comedies, which my dad saw in Poland at the time it came out, which shows you maybe just how popular this film was. But again, if you watched it and did not know it was Canadian, you would not know it's Canadian.
Yeah, chameleon that way.
Another film from the 80s that's quite highly regarded, which was at least a Canadian co-production, was filmed in Canada as Quest for Fire, which is about cavemen. It is the movie where Ron Perlman plays himself. The director went on to make another movie set in Canada called The Bear.
It's not in Canada.
But which is filmed in the Alps and has no Canadian actors or involvement at all.
But, yeah. I can't believe they did that. It's really funny.
I will say it does shockingly look like British Columbia.
Yeah.
I had thought for the longest time that it was shot in British Columbia. It was not shot in British Columbia. That almost covers our 1980s period.
No, we have two really unfortunate films we have to talk about.
Live action film.
Oh, I see.
From the early period. The other one is Dance Me Outside.
It looks so good. And I meant to watch that because I wanted to watch good movies for this as well. I did see the trailer, but I just didn't have the time to get to it. And it looked hilarious and witty, and it's a part of a culture that I wish I knew more about too. So
yeah, it is about life on a reservation in Northern Ontario. It's based on a book by W.P. Kinsella, who's best known for Field of Dreams, Canadian author. Worth pointing out, a white author, and the director of this movie was white, but the entire cast is necessarily Native American. And a lot of good things did come out of making this film, which also came on the heels of Aboriginal filmmaking in the United States and U.S.-Canadian co-productions like Smoke Signals and some other films about reservation life. One of the actresses, I forget her first name, but her last name's Badamski, went on to direct an award-winning film about Life on a Reservation, and that's mm-hmm. been in a lot of other films. Mm-hmm. A lot of the actors went on to have very successful careers that mm-hmm. started out with this movie. As for the movie itself, low budget, not even particularly well shot, but well paced, very good dialogue, good plots, well acted, worth seeing.
And now you get your secret Indian name. I'm the Wolverine! This is just a clip from the trailer I saw on YouTube.
Mm-hmm. You're not going to talk about the YouTube comments?
Oh, yeah. And what's really funny is I think it's also available on YouTube, so anyone who wants to see it, it's accessible. Whether or not I condone that, I will not say. And what's nice is that in all the comments I could see on YouTube were things like, hey, my auntie was the girl in the background in such and such scene. So it looks like it has a small, devoted, and charming following.
Unfortunately, we have to shift to another topic of movies made in the 80s.
It's really unfortunate, actually.
Now, in terms of animation, Canada has made several important contributions.
These are not them.
You won't be them. But a lot of early short animated films with kind of revolutionary techniques were made by the National Film Board,
mm-hmm.
including a rather famous and also really grotesquely animated Cat Came Back video.
Cat Came Back.
Which
very
might
nice
be
too.
One of the most seen... most seen animated shorts maybe in the world.
Could be. It's cringeworthy, that one, but it's funny. It's awful, though.
Mm-hmm. So as far as we can tell, there's only ever been one full-length movie to come solely out of Canada.
Oh, and it's a treat. It is special.
This is, of course,
Rock and Rule!
By Delvada Studios, which is probably most famous for animating the raccoons.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, they did pursue the ambition of making a full-length film for wide release across North America, which, how many years was this in the making?
It was rife with production errors of people dropping the project, trying to bury the project. I think it was like 6 years at least, longer maybe.
The strange thing is, most of this movie was made over the course of the 70s. But when you watch Rock and Rule...
it's so 80s.
It's the 80s.
It is basically, much as how there is the solid evil in Time Bandits, this is basically what the 80s would be if you were to make it into a solid form.
For a plot summary, Mick Jagger with a Zeppelin?
Yeah, basically. He's called Mock Swagger in this.
And sings one of the most terrible songs.
My name is Muck. Thanks a lot. Doesn't even friggin' rhyme.
Does not take place in Canada.
Nope. Takes place in Ometown. In New York.
It's post-apocalyptic America, and for some reason everybody's mutated to look sort of like rats.
Kind of animal heads. Apparently this is because of it was a nuclear apocalypse is one theory I've heard, but I think that's retconning it. I have no idea why they animated people with animal heads.
Yeah. Mock Swagger's career is failing,
mm-hmm.
so he wants to capture this girl because her voice can summon a demon to do something.
Yeah. He's kind of a Mick Jagger David Bowie figure. He sort of has this whole heavy metal lord of magic and darkness thing going on anyway. So I was like, I just really will summon a demon now is sort of where we start. Yeah. And then it gets a bit convoluted.
It's only 70 minutes long.
Also on YouTube.
Because if you want to see weird animated movies that are rare, they're on YouTube for whatever reason.
I don't know if I can honestly recommend it. It's an experience to watch it.
The animation itself is not bad.
It's good. It's good animation,
The script is something of a disaster.
There's that whole bit that happens off screen because I couldn't be barsed to do it on screen, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
They had to get back to Ometown somehow.
The main characters are supremely annoying.
Yeah, there's, oh my goodness, it's like if Marty McFly could be more arrogant and have a worse mullet and wear Michael Jackson-esque 80s clothes and just be a general brat and not understand how to have a band. Oh my god! I don't even remember his name, that character. Omar! His name is Omar. Yeah. It's hard to tell who exactly the audience is supposed to be. Because there's a lot of... It's, I mean, they're animal-headed people, so it's... And the, some of the humor is fairly sort of slapstick and...
A lot of the humor is slapstick, yeah. But then people swear...
And trip out and have weird sort of sexual gestures at each other.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah.
I don't think they went into this movie with a finished script.
No, and they don't have very good music in it for a movie about rock and roll.
Yeah, it's a movie with the title Rock and Roll that's about how music can do magic, etc., etc.
Mm-hmm.
Not that much.
Yeah.
I guess it lists that there's Iggy Pop in it, but I did not recognize which of those songs was by Iggy Pop.
Yeah.
What music there is generally played in very small snatches.
Mm-hmm. We should probably just leave it there.
Yeah. The other one from Nelvana Studios, which is only partially animated by them, is a Every Country in Europe plus Canada co-production.
Yep.
Heavy Metal, based on a, I believe, a French magazine.
Yep.
It's an anthology film of wildly varying quality between segments.
It's a bit of a train wreck as well.
Oh, yeah.
Again, some of the animation in it is pretty landmark, but a lot of the stories are crude, boring, poorly animated, or, in general, a giant waste of time.
Yep.
The two segments that were animated by Nelvana, I will admit, are the better segments. The B-52 Bomber segment and the Tarna segment at the very end. That last one being particularly well animated in comparison. Although it takes her forever to get her sort of clothes on to go and then Avenger race because she couldn't get there in time to save them because I think she was dressing forever. But anyway, yeah.
To recommend it, awesome soundtrack.
Really good soundtrack, yeah.
Yeah, but you can get that separately anyway.
Yeah. Rotoscoped car at the beginning.
Oh yeah, that's
it raises your hopes, which are then really promptly dashed. Yeah.
So after that... doesn't seem like any other full-length 2D animated films came out, either from Nelvana Studios or Canada in general.
I think the dreams were crushed so...
So thoroughly.
Yeah. And yeah, let's also not talk about them anymore.
So let's move into the 90s.
Ooh, the 90s.
The one Québécois film we're going to talk about, which we both saw on an Air Canada flight.
I saw it on an Air Canada flight because you said you saw it on an Air Canada flight and it sounded amazing and I just happened to know I was going overseas, so I decided to just wait until I was online on the airplane. I said, excellent, there is a copy of Maelstrom here. I can watch this.
Yeah, when I was in grad school in Montreal, a joke that I used to make when people would bring up Québécois cinema was that the only thing that I associated Québécois cinema with was that movie with the talking fish in it.
Yeah.
And then, lo and behold, on the flight from Quebec, there it was.
It's an option on your Air Canada en route programming. Mm-hmm.
So it was filmed in Montreal
in
the 90s. I found it very amusing because every scene I could identify where it was taking place because I'd been there.
It's also pretty funny.
Yeah. It does not start out in Montreal. It starts out somewhere in Norway in a fishmonger's shop where he is cutting off fish heads. And one of them starts to tell a story of love and woe. Smash cut to an abortion.
Not many films can pull that off.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, really well acted, I would say.
Very good.
The plot is very non-traditional.
But easy to follow. It's not a convoluted movie.
It's pretty twisted, I would say. I don't want to give too much away because I'd actually like people to see this.
Yeah, it is worthwhile.
Again, production value's not that high.
No, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, some of the cinematography is quite good in it, though. This did win a bunch of awards when it came out. It was on the news a lot. This is why I associated Québécois film with this, because anytime it was brought up, it was this movie.
And I think it's does it justice. It's a good film.
Mm-hmm.
I laughed all the way to England. Well, not all the way. It's not that long.
Mm-hmm. So that takes us out from Maelstrom. I guess I should add that this is part of the soundtrack.
Yeah, it has some interesting music in there.
That, I believe, brings us to our CBC Movie Nights!
CBC Movie Nights!
Oh
my goodness.
The 2000s, our own decade.
Yep. Wow, they were bad.
The first one we saw, I don't think most people would consider a Canadian film.
Also, we should preface that we watched this film, not because at this point we hadn't planned to do a Canadian film podcast. You said, I want to see Keira Knightley's really bad Russian accent that I've heard about. And I said, I'll watch that.
So if you haven't guessed yet, we are talking about A Dangerous Method, directed by David Cronenberg, who is a prolific and famous Canadian, at least best known as a horror director.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to really talk about his films on this podcast, because they're usually produced outside of Canada, or if they're shot in Canada, they usually don't have Canadian actors, and A Dangerous Method is no exception, because it takes place in Vienna, for the most part.
Yeah, and stars Keira Knightley, Michael Fassbender, and
Viggo Mortensen in a very memorable turd as Sigmund Freud.
Very convincing. Didn't even recognize him initially.
This would have been a very good movie.
Yeah, Michael Fassbender plays Jung.
The plot is interesting.
Yeah.
It's well shot.
Yeah.
There's only one really bad bit of CGI, which is when they go to America in their fake ship and fake background of fake Statue of Liberty being fake.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a very small part of the film. Otherwise, I believe it was mostly shot in Vienna anyways.
Yeah,
so.
Quite good costumes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Convincing sets. Unfortunately, completely derailed by Keira Knightley.
She is something to behold.
Oh my
goodness.
This
movie. Before this, I wouldn't have believed that a single actor or actress could ruin a film.
That is one. It's not a Russian accent. It's. I don't know what it is. Other than a train wreck.
She pulls her quote-unquote crazy face.
Which seems to be trying to mimic the Habsburg jaw and straining.
And doing all these twitchy movements, and you can't tell what kind of mental disorder she's supposed to be having, because the one she actually had would not
line
up with what the performance there is.
Yeah, so having spent a reasonable amount of time in psychiatry and having interest in mental health, I cannot give us any idea what's going on other than bad acting. Because I can't, nothing makes sense, as it typically does in film anyway, though. That's a side topic from Canadian film, but mental health is usually never represented accurately in movies.
Mm-hmm.
It's a mixture of the initial sort of pretend crazy thing she has going on, but mainly it's the accent the whole way through, and that just, any scene she's in is trashed entirely.
Yeah, again, we're talking about this as if it were Canadian film, and I guess Canada was involved in production, but I don't think it's really considered one in any way, shape, or form.
It was on CBC Canadian Movie Night.
Yep, that's why we've included it in this podcast.
Yep.
The next movie, definitely considered Canadian, with a Canadian theme, and Canadian
this has a
everything.
This has a lighthouse.
And it has a lighthouse in it.
Cape Breton.
Take This Waltz, Sarah Pauley's second film.
Mm-hmm.
And it's terrible.
Wow. I've never seen so many primary colors so loudly splashed across every set and costume.
The color palette is just
offensive.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, it's never specified where this is taking place. I had to look it up on Wikipedia.
It's Toronto?
It's in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard to recognize due to this weird color palette. It's in a Toronto suburb, which has Italian stuff associated with it. The main character is supremely unlikable.
And supposedly meant to be unlikable, but she's Not even unlikable in an interesting way.
It also happens to be a movie that, as far as I can tell, is about nothing.
The movie accomplishes the amazing feat of making Seth Rogen the most sympathetic character, which I've never had the experience of feeling before.
All of the side characters are more interesting than the main character.
There's a drunken woman who runs a car into a lamppost and comes out and says, "I bought some chickens." And I wanted to know the story behind that much more than I wanted to know anything else in this film.
So the main character is Margot, who's in her late 20s, early 30s, I would guess.
Yeah, around there.
She got married not too long ago to Seth Rogen. And she meets this creepy artist.
Who drives a rickshaw.
Who has a surprisingly large apartment for somebody who makes their main income off of driving a rickshaw around Toronto.
Yeah, well, he has a house, and at the very end he has an apartment that neither of them could afford. Also has this penchant for talking like like he's reading out erotica.
He is. Everything he does is just super creepy, but Margot's totally into it.
Yeah, in a way that I find problematic from a feminist point of view, to be honest. No one should be turned on by a guy talking about kind of weird rapey things at them in a cafe. They should say, maybe throw their drink at him and run out quickly.
The title is derived from a song by Leonard Cohen, which is not featured very prominently in this film.
Oh, I'd say it's prominent. It's during a very long sex scene right at the end.
True. But Video Killed the Radio Star pops up way more often.
You should have called it that.
So we did watch it to the end.
Oh, we did, because we could complain about this one, too.
We were mostly baffled, I think.
I almost feel like we could post the transcript of our conversation to be more, it's being fairly entertaining, but yeah. Oh my goodness, it was such an awful movie. I just don't understand why you'd leave someone who makes you chicken and loves you and is nice to you for a guy who's a bit weird and strange. I don't really buy the sort of modern ennui issue that it's kind of supposed to be talking about. I think it's just strange. And there's nothing funny about peeing in a pool.
Are we going to talk about that scene?
I brought it up.
So there's one bit where she's doing aquarobics.
Aquasize. Mm-hmm.
And she finds it so funny that she pees herself.
Mm-hmm.
And her sister-in-law, some relation, tells her, you can't. When she says, "I'm going to pee," the other person's like, "No, you can't do that. This is the pool water that changes color when you pee, which does not exist."
Yeah, no, they definitely, that isn't a thing that happens.
Anyway, she does pee herself. And is tittering the whole time while everybody else is understandably disgusted.
Gets out of the pool.
I don't understand
what's so funny about aerobics. And also apparently can't figure out that her husband's throwing water onto her. There's so many things wrong with this film. Let's talk about something else.
let's move on. I was super interested in Seth Rogen's cookbook, and that was about it.
Yeah, chicken.
So, moving on from Sarah Pollard, the next film that was shown the week afterwards was Edwin Boyd, Citizen Gangster, which we finished Take This Waltz.
We couldn't finish this one. We couldn't even get angry about this one.
Definitely a Canadian movie.
Very Canadian.
Very Canadian subject. Very Canadian story.
Yeah.
Edwin Boyd existed. He did, in fact, rob banks.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever was interesting about that story, this movie does not want to tell it.
Nope. They did their costuming and set design by making everything sepia tone, basically. And a couple of guys are wearing fedoras.
Yeah, they just darken the colors a bit, but otherwise it does not look like any effort was put into set design.
No.
And it's probably they just didn't have the budget to do it. They try and set up these super stylish black and white shots, like at the prison where there's only one guard, and so on. They don't work.
Easiest prison to escape from ever.
The pacing is terrible.
The motivation doesn't make any sense. I mean, it logically makes sense, but not. It's not from the way it's acted. Mm-hmm. The actor doesn't make it make sense.
And there's one point where he's robbing banks, and we thought, well, maybe they just had the one bank for a set. But then it's brought up within the film that he's just repeatedly robbing the same bank.
That's sort of why he gets caught, which shouldn't surprise him. So, yeah. And the acting is entirely lifeless on everyone's part in this movie. This is why we stopped, because nothing was happening.
Yeah, so...
It didn't need to happen.
We don't have anything else to say about Edwin Boyce's and Gangster.
Yeah, no, you can put it on in the background for someone to fall asleep to, I guess. That's about it.
So far, I think every film we've talked about has had a minuscule to no budget, right?
Mm, yeah.
There has been a big budget Canadian film. Marie hasn't seen it, though.
No, I couldn't bring myself to. I've heard too much about it.
This is Passchendaele, directed by Paul Gross, best known for probably best known for Due South.
Mm-hmm.
Best known in Canadian cinema for another movie called Men with Brooms about curling,
mm-hmm.
which you haven't seen it, have you?
Again, didn't want to.
It's pretty bad.
It looks like it.
It's about as good as a curling movie could be, I guess. Anyway, somebody gave him a bunch of money to make a World War I film. Passchendaele, where Paul Gross gets to be Jesus Christ. It's bad.
Yeah. How is it bad? What makes this movie bad?
Okay, what makes this movie bad? There are good actors in this movie. Most of them are wasted. The main plot is about Paul Gross having to defend a kid who gets sent to the front, or a teenager. This teenager is supremely annoying. The actual representation of the World War I front does not involve trenches. It involves people sitting in craters filled with water, which is a good way for everyone to die of disease who doesn't die going over the top. At the end of this film, which I will spoil because it is not worth watching, the kid gets blown up by a mine and ends up strung up on a bunch of wood like a crucifix. Paul Gross goes across to the Germans, picks up the kid, and bears him on his back like Jesus would back to the Canadian trench. And the Germans are like, this is so heroic, we're not going to shoot at them.
Oh.
It is patriotic drivel.
I remember when it was coming out because it was mentioned in the Gateway at the University of Alberta, which is the newspaper there, and how the hype was and everyone was excited. And then I remember a sudden petering out of commentary upon it, I think, as people saw it and realized the dreck that
it
was.
It hit theaters like a rock and sunk straight to the bottom. And this probably was not a good thing for the future of higher budget Canadian movies. Don't see it. What else can I say?
Mm-hmm.
Got a few more Canadian movies to talk about, or to not talk about, as the case may be, before we get on to one we are both super enthusiastic about.
Yeah.
There is Margaret's Museum, which is considered the quintessential Canadian movie.
Not worth talking about it.
Really boring and depressing, and
I think Will Ferguson's summation of it in How to Be a Canadian is probably all you need to know about it. So go read that book because it's funny.
Mm-hmm. Then there's a bunch of, I believe, made for TV movies of Anne Green Gables.
So much Anne Green Gables stuff. I find Anne annoying. We're not talking about those.
Yeah, there are several Anne Green Gables movies. They all star the same actress as Anne Green Gables as she ages, which I guess continuity porn.
Mm-hmm.
Why not? There is a actually very good, and I did say we were only talking about one Quebecois film, but this one's also Quebecois. Very good movie called Incendies. Also, while small parts of it take place in Canada, most of it takes place in Lebanon, which means it's not really held up in critical reviews as a Canadian movie, I found.
Quite good, though, from what you told me.
Yeah, it's a really well-shot movie. It's a co-production between a bunch of countries, which seems to be the only way to scrape together the proper budget for this. It is based on a Canadian play.
As from what I could tell from the trailer for that, again, another film I intended to watch, it looked excellent, so I think I'll be checking that one out.
Mm-hmm.
I heard about this movie so much on CBC Radio Edmonton, I have to mention it now. I really wanted to bring myself to watch it, but then I saw the trailer and I said, oh no, not touching that with a 6-foot pole. This is a movie that was shot in Edmonton. It seems mainly undressed sets. Called Rock, Paper, Dice, Enter. I'm not clear what it's about. Some kind of thriller, intrigue, money, thievery thing, and the Dalai Lama's involved.
Hacking.
Yeah. Someone has blue hair. And I don't know how many of those people in the trailer are actors. It's difficult to tell. Apparently well-received in India, this movie. This is all I know about it, but the trailer doesn't look very good. Kind of funny because you can recognize bits of Edmonton and streets in White Ave and stuff, but then again, I could make a film about those things, and I'd find that as neat. So, yeah, not going to be seeing that one, I don't think.
So I think we've covered
the
not-so-wonderful portion of Canadian cinema.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about a movie now that we both really love.
This movie's amazing. This is a really... It's just a good movie.
It is The Trotsky. Let's pull out the DVD case, shall we? It came out in 2010. It stars Jay Baruchel as Leonard Bronstein, a student in Western Montreal English School, who believes he's the reincarnation of Leon Trotsky and goes forth to start a revolution!
Making a union!
A student union.
A real union.
Jay Baruchel's performance, this was his breakout performance. He's been in a lot of movies after this. It is amazing.
It's so good. Oh, man. So funny.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think this many jokes about communism could happen in Hollywood.
Yeah, the thing is, we're talking about, this was a very good film. It's also a really well-produced film, well-shot film, well-acted film. It's also a film that I couldn't see being made anywhere but in Canada.
Yeah, truly.
And obviously, it takes place in Montreal.
Yeah.
Oddly enough, in Anglophone Montreal.
Yeah,
which you don't see that often.
Yeah, there's even a comment in the middle of, well, the English schools care about this. French people don't care at all.
Yeah, half the population cares about this.
Yes.
The French people don't care at all.
Yeah, that's right. Which is very, you have to be Canadian to really get that joke, I think.
Mm-hmm. It's a very well-intentioned and sweet movie, while also being very biting.
The dialogue is so clever. I think on the category of Sherlock clever, to be honest. Like, just really very fast. I haven't laughed out loud this much at a film for a very long time. And the three of us, we watched it last night. We're just in stitches the whole way through.
Yeah, this was the first time you'd seen it.
Yeah, that's right.
It's the first time your husband had seen it.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen this movie multiple times.
Still funny.
The characters are all really well drawn, even the ones that have maybe one or two lines of dialogue, like Dwight.
Down with Dwight! That's something I can get behind.
It has Colm Feore, a Canadian actor who's gone on to some acclaim. Again, in Hollywood and elsewhere.
Yes.
Colm Feore at his Colm Furious.
Oh my goodness, he's amazing.
As the principal of the public school.
I particularly love that moment when he turns and he's in the same sort of profile as the Lenin picture in the background. The two of them lining up was just fantastic. Also, quite a lot of fascist jokes that are actually quite funny.
Mm-hmm. A lineup of almost exclusively Canadian actors,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Mm-hmm.
All very good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A lot of very talented people came together to produce this wonderful thing.
Mm-hmm. And I was pleased, because when you told me about the plot, I thought, oh, that's interesting. I thought it was going to be a long period of figuring out that he was the reincarnation of the Trotsky, but it actually begins with that as the premise. This kid thinks he's the reincarnation of Leon Trotsky. Off we go. And the pacing is actually very nice. It keeps going, and it has the appropriate kind of carrying you along, and you don't really feel the time passing, and you're sad when it's over.
Yeah, it's super snappy.
Mm-hmm.
It even has a love story that your husband said was going to ruin the movie if it actually happened.
But it didn't.
Which unfolds in such a way that it actually ends up being believable and kind of sweet.
This is a movie that we won't spoil entirely because it's worth seeing multiple times.
It is a wonderful, wonderful movie, and basically everyone involved in it has gone on to much larger things. The thing is, watching this comedy, you think this would kick off some kind of renaissance in Canadian filmmaking, right? Because this is a real, unlike what we've seen before, a really well-produced film, well shot, all the budget. It probably didn't have a very high budget, but all the money went where it had to go. But as far as I can tell, all the talent involved in this movie went to L.A.
Yeah, as tends to happen. And I did notice, because I took this out of the library, because that's how I do movies, the librarian even mentioned that she had seen it taken up multiple times. That was very funny. Probably a lot of people on the university are getting it out for film studies classes, but I'd like to think it's also because people have heard about it, but I doubt it.
Anyway, if you haven't seen it,
oh my god, go see it.
Please do so.
I feel like, though, that it's with the theme of the Trotsky, it just wouldn't have gotten any grip in the States at all. So, yeah.
As I said before, this doesn't seem like a movie you could make outside of Canada.
Yeah.
It's kind of unique in that way.
Yeah.
So that brings us to the end of our movie review segments.
Yeah, I mean, there are many more Canadian films that we haven't seen, or that we're just not talking about. Mm-hmm. We know they're there, but yeah.
But now that we've gone through this sampling over the course of how many weeks we did this, coming out of this discussion, what have we learned? We learned that when we started this project, we did not think we were going to pan, or at least I didn't think that we would pan so many of the films.
I was pretty sure we were going to pan quite a lot of them. I have learned that Canadian films can be tolerable, and I look forward to watching Dazia Side, and I think also Pontypool, which is sort of a Canadian film, which you haven't talked about, but also meant to watch that one and hadn't got around to it.
Yeah, a lot of what I've thought coming out of this is what I've mentioned at the beginning. I did not see much in the way of connecting themes, cinematography styles, narrative structures. This is a very disparate group of films, besides the fact that most of them were bad. They were bad in very different ways.
Yeah, I do wish we had a more interesting film industry, but it's very, I think we're in a difficult kind of economic situation for that.
Yeah, I think the Trotsky showed that we can do it in Canada. There's definite potential there, as long as things don't end up draining, as they inevitably do, towards the Hollywood machine.
We haven't really talked about much more about the National Film Board stuff, but a lot of that stuff is frankly weird.
Again, National Film Board of Canada mostly did documentaries. Of the fictional short films that they've done, all of them are strange, experimental.
Yeah.
Low budget.
I have seen one other documentary by, because we previously reviewed The Burning Time, so we're not going to talk about it again. But I have seen another one called Carts of Darkness, which is the worst pun, about homeless people in Vancouver and shopping carts.
I don't think we've convinced anyone about our national film industry.
No. I mean, you don't need to watch Canadian films to be Canadian, or I don't think you're missing much if you don't watch them. The only thing you'd be missing is the Trotsky, and that would be a shame. That's, I think, what we can take away from what we've learned from this time, which began in Hinton a lonely time ago.
That has been episode 16 of the One Last Sketch podcast. If you want to listen to more episodes or read articles and various sundry things, you can go to my website, onelastsketch.wordpress.com. You can also listen to past episodes on iTunes and on Stitcher. You can visit Marie's blog.
Yes, I do have a blog, which is more about arts and medicine, yatropexy.com. It'll be linked below. Have a good night. Maybe watch some Canadian films. It's entirely up to you.
And if you like this podcast, recommend it.
It's also Canadian.
Wait, wait, wait. It's not over yet.
Yeah, this. We realized something.
And we came back 2 days after recording it so that we could tell you.
It's vital. You must know this about Canadian films. It is, in fact, an interdwelling theme. It was your observation, Michael.
Yeah, we first saw this in A Dangerous Method, and it popped up again in Sarah Polley's movie.
Yeah, take this waltz.
It seems that in Canadian films, to represent men having sex with women, the man will invariably have sex with the mattress.
And in Hollywood movies, they more often have sex with the woman's belly button. So...
Who knew?
Make of that what you will.